All right, so today we are taking a deep dive into hematology. Get ready, it's going to be a wild ride.
Definitely. Lots to uncover here.
No textbooks, though, right? Just straight into a nursing guide that caught my eye. It's all about anemia, polycythemia, and some other really interesting blood disorders. I had no idea how much I didn't know about this stuff.
Oh, yeah. It can get pretty complex.
Which is why you're here, to guide us through it.
Happy to help.
So let's jump right in. Anemia, it's something we hear about all the time, but what's really going on when someone has it? I mean, I know it's more than just feeling a little tired.
Absolutely. It's all about oxygen.
Yeah.
You see, your red blood cells, think of them like tiny little delivery trucks.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, they carry oxygen all over your body to
Yeah.
every single cell.
Makes sense.
Anemia happens when those trucks, the red blood cells, either there aren't enough of them or they're not working properly. So your organs and tissues don't get enough oxygen.
And that's why people feel tired.
Exactly. Fatigue is a big one.
But this guide also mentions some other pretty surprising symptoms and even some serious complications if anemia gets really bad. Like, what kind of things are we talking about?
Well, it depends how severe the anemia is. Like you said, mild cases might just be that kind of general rundown feeling. But as it gets worse, you can get short of breath, dizziness, your heart might race, you can even get pale skin. And in severe cases, it can affect your heart, it can make it harder for wounds to heal, and some people even faint.
I had no idea it could be that serious. Makes you think, you know, that brain fog feeling that everyone gets when they're tired. Maybe that's sometimes a sign of anemia.
It's possible.
Interesting. Now, this guide breaks anemia down into different types,
Right?
and some of them really caught my eye. So, iron deficiency anemia, it seems pretty straightforward, not enough iron.
Well, it often starts with diet,
Okay, that's what I thought.
but it can be more complicated than that. Sometimes there's blood loss involved, could be heavy periods, or even internal bleeding that someone doesn't even realize is happening. And sometimes the body just has trouble absorbing iron from food. No matter how much iron someone eats, their body just can't seem to use it.
Ah, so there could be all sorts of reasons.
Exactly.
Okay. Then there's this thing called pica. I've heard of it, but it still sounds kind of crazy to me. It's linked to iron deficiency, right?
It is.
What is actually going on there?
So with pica, people crave, and they actually eat, things that aren't food,
Like what?
like dirt, sometimes ice, even paper.
That is so bizarre.
It is strange, but it's a real condition.
But why? Why would someone crave dirt if they need iron?
You know, we don't fully understand the connection, but one theory is that the body is kind of desperately searching for those missing nutrients.
Oh, so it's like it's so desperate for iron that it's like maybe there's some in this dirt.
Yeah, like it's trying to find it anywhere it can.
Wow. Okay, so we've got iron. But the guide also talks about anemias from vitamin deficiencies. Like, what's going on with those?
Right. So vitamin B12 and folate are both really important for making red blood cells. If you don't have enough of those vitamins, that whole process gets messed up, and you end up with what's called megaloblastic anemia.
Megaloblastic, big word.
Yeah, it's a mouthful.
So, how is that different from the iron deficiency anemia we were just talking about?
Well, with megaloblastic anemia, you can get neurological symptoms, especially with a B12 deficiency.
Oh, interesting.
So people might experience tingling in their hands and feet,
Yeah.
maybe have trouble walking.
Really?
Yeah, and sometimes even cognitive changes, like memory problems and
So,
stuff.
it's not just physical, it can affect your brain too.
Exactly.
Okay, this is getting pretty deep. Now we have to talk about sickle cell disease.
Yeah,
The
definitely.
guide mentions it a lot, and it sounds fascinating, but also really serious.
It is. So sickle cell disease is genetic. It changes the shape of your red blood cells. Instead of being nice and round, they become stiff and sickle-shaped.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, and those misshapen cells, they have trouble moving through the blood vessels, so they can cause blockages. And when that happens, the tissues don't get enough oxygen. And that's when you start seeing all sorts of complications.
Like what? The guide mentions organ damage and pain crises. It sounds like a lot more than just anemia.
Oh, it's a lot more. Imagine dealing with constant pain, especially in your bones and joints. Then there's the risk of stroke.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And people with sickle cell often end up in the hospital a lot. Their organs can get damaged, like the spleen, kidneys, even the lungs.
That's really heavy stuff. It's crazy to think that just the shape of your blood cells can have such a huge impact on your life.
It is. It's really remarkable.
All right, so we've talked a lot about not having enough red blood cells,
Right.
but what about the opposite problem? What happens if you have too many? That's where polycythemia comes in, right?
Exactly. Polycythemia. It's like the flip side of anemia. You have too many red blood cells, and that makes your blood thicker than it should be.
And why is that a problem? What happens when your blood gets thick?
Well, imagine trying to pour syrup through a straw. It doesn't flow very easily, does it?
No, it gets all clogged up.
Exactly. Same thing with your blood. If it's too thick, it can't move through your blood vessels as smoothly, and that increases the risk of blood clots.
Oh, I see.
And those blood clots can lead to serious problems like stroke or heart attack.
So too many red blood cells isn't a good thing either.
Nope. Too much of a good thing can be a bad thing, even with blood.
That makes sense. Now, the guide mentions two types of polycythemia, primary and secondary. What's the difference?
So with primary polycythemia, sometimes called polycythemia vera, the problem is in your bone marrow. It just starts churning out way too many red blood cells for no obvious reason.
Ah, so the factory's gone haywire.
Exactly. But with secondary polycythemia, it's usually a response to something else. Like if your body isn't getting enough oxygen,
okay. It
happens sometimes with people with COPD or people living at high altitudes, their body tries to compensate by making more red blood cells.
Mm-hmm. So in one case, your body's overproducing, and in the other, it's just trying to make up for something else.
Exactly.
Interesting. Now, this nursing guide focuses a lot on care and management. So if someone is diagnosed with one of these conditions, what can they do? What are some of the key takeaways for our listeners?
Well, the first thing is to catch it early, especially for anemias that are easy to treat, like iron deficiency, B12 deficiency, folate deficiency. Often, simple changes to your diet or taking supplements can make a world of difference.
Oh, okay, that makes sense. But what about the more serious stuff like sickle cell or polycythemia?
Yeah, those are tougher. With sickle cell, a lot of the focus is on managing the symptoms and trying to prevent those pain crises from happening. That could mean pain management, staying hydrated to help the blood flow better, and even medications. In severe cases, they might need blood transfusions.
So really trying to just minimize the impact on their lives as much as possible.
Exactly. And with polycythemia, the goal is to thin the blood and prevent those dangerous clots from forming. One way to do that is with phlebotomy. Basically, it's like donating blood, but it's done specifically to lower the red blood cell count. And again, hydration is super important. And sometimes medications are used to help thin the blood and prevent those clots.
It seems like the more you know about these conditions, the better.
Absolutely. Knowledge is power.
The more you understand how your body works and what can affect your blood, the better you can take care of yourself.
Absolutely.
Well, this has been fascinating so far. From weird cravings to blood cells changing shape, this deep dive into the world of hematology has been, well, bloody interesting. But we're not done yet.
Yeah, it's wild. And what about for people who maybe aren't feeling any major symptoms? Like, what can they do to be proactive about their blood health? Are there any red flags they should be looking out for?
That's a great question. I mean, it's so easy to ignore our blood until something feels really wrong. So what would you say are some early warning signs? Like, how do you know if something might be off with your blood?
Well, listening to your body is always the first step. Noticing any changes that just seem out of the ordinary. Like if you're tired all the time,
yeah,
weak, short of breath, or your skin seems really pale.
Okay.
Those could be signs of anemia.
So definitely worth getting checked out.
Yeah, for sure.
What about those more specific things we were talking about earlier, like those neurological symptoms with B12 deficiency?
Yeah.
Should those be a concern?
Oh, yeah, definitely. If you're getting that tingling or numbness in your hands and feet, having trouble walking, noticing changes in your thinking, like memory problems or confusion, those are definitely red flags.
Don't ignore those.
Right.
Okay. Now, the guide also mentions jaundice as a potential sign of something going on with your blood. What exactly is jaundice?
So jaundice is when your skin and the whites of your eyes turn yellow. It can be a sign of a type of anemia called hemolytic anemia. That's where your red blood cells are being destroyed faster than your body can make them.
Okay.
And you might notice your urine getting darker too.
So those visual cues can be really important.
They can.
Now, this guide gets into something called the etiological classification of anemia. Can you explain what that means?
Etiological classification. Basically, it just means we're grouping anemias based on what's causing them.
Okay, that makes sense.
So the guide talks about three main categories. Anemia is caused by decreased production of red blood cells. Anemia is from blood loss. And anemia is caused by increased destruction of red blood cells.
So it's like detective work, figuring out the root of the problem.
Exactly.
Not just treating the symptoms. Okay, so let's go through those categories. What are some examples of anemias caused by decreased production?
Well, we already talked about iron deficiency anemia and megaloblastic anemia. Those both fall into this category. Another one is aplastic anemia. That's a pretty serious condition where your bone marrow, which is responsible for making all of your blood cells,
Right.
it's not working properly.
Okay, so the factory is just not producing enough.
Yeah, something like that.
What about anemia from blood loss? Is it always obvious when someone's losing blood?
Not always. Acute blood loss, like from an injury or surgery, that's usually pretty obvious.
Okay.
But chronic blood loss, it can be sneaky. It happens gradually over time, and people might not even realize it's happening.
Oh, wow.
Could be things like bleeding in the digestive system, heavy periods, or even donating blood too often.
So those little losses over time can really add up.
They can.
Okay, and then the last category, increased red blood cell destruction. We talked about sickle cell disease, but what are some other examples of this type of anemia?
Well, there's something called immune hemolytic anemia. With this one, your own immune system is attacking and destroying your red blood cells.
Oh, wow. Like an autoimmune thing?
Yeah, kind of. It's like your body is fighting against itself.
That's crazy.
It is. The guide also points out some special considerations for older adults when it comes to anemia.
Oh, right. So are older adults just more likely to get anemia?
They are more vulnerable to certain types, like iron deficiency anemia and B12 deficiency. It's because of a lot of things. Sometimes it's changes in their diet, or their body just doesn't absorb nutrients from food as well anymore. There are even changes in the stomach as you age that can make it harder to absorb B12.
Oh, interesting. So it's not just that our bodies wear out over time. There are specific changes that make anemia more likely. What about the complications of anemia in older adults? Are those any different?
Yeah, they are at higher risk of more serious problems. Anemia can make other health conditions they have even worse. It can contribute to heart failure, falls, cognitive decline.
So it can really affect their quality of life.
It definitely can.
So early detection and proper management seem even more important for older
For
adults.
sure.
Now, this guide talks a lot about the nursing management of anemia. We don't have time to get into all of that, but can we talk about some general strategies for managing anemia? Like, what are some things people can do to help themselves if they get diagnosed?
Well, the first thing is to treat the underlying cause, right? So if it's iron deficiency, maybe iron supplements or dietary changes to get more iron. B12 or folate deficiencies, take supplements. If blood loss is the problem, you've got to find the source and stop the bleeding.
Okay.
And for the more chronic or complex anemias, like sickle cell or immune hemolytic anemia,
Yeah, those are tougher.
yeah, with those, it's often about trying to relieve the symptoms, prevent things from getting worse, and just improve the person's quality of life. So that might mean pain management, blood transfusions, or medications to suppress the immune system if it's an autoimmune problem.
So it's really about finding the right treatment for each individual.
Exactly.
The guide also talks about monitoring for fatigue, activity intolerance, and signs of hypoxia. What exactly is hypoxia?
Hypoxia is when your tissues aren't getting enough oxygen.
Yeah.
And that's a big deal with anemia, because the whole point of red blood cells is to carry oxygen. So hypoxia can damage your organs, and if it goes on too long, it can even be fatal.
Wow.
Yeah. So even those symptoms that seem kind of mild, like fatigue and shortness of breath, they could be warning signs of something much more serious.
So how can people prevent that? What can they do to avoid those complications?
Well, pacing yourself, not overdoing it, can help prevent the fatigue and shortness of breath.
Okay.
Listen to your body. If you're feeling those things, take a break. Staying hydrated is also important. Dehydration can make anemia symptoms worse.
So it's not just about treating the anemia itself, it's also about managing its impact on your daily life.
Right.
Now, are there any lifestyle things people can do to help with anemia?
Yeah, definitely. Eating a good diet, rich in iron, B12, folate, that can go a long way in preventing or managing certain types of anemia, getting enough sleep, managing stress, and getting some exercise, as long as you don't overdo it. All of those things can improve your overall health, and that can help with your blood health too.
So it's a whole body approach.
It really is.
Okay. Let's switch gears again, talk about polycythemia. The guide talks about the nursing management of that condition. We won't get into all of that, but what are some general strategies for managing it? Like, what's the main goal?
The main goal with polycythemia is to thin the blood and reduce the risk of blood clots.
Yeah.
We talked about phlebotomy, which is where they really remove blood from your body.
Right.
That's one way to thin the blood and lower that red blood cell count.
Mm-hmm.
And there are also medications like hydroxyurea
Okay.
that can help suppress the bone marrow from making so many red blood cells. And sometimes they'll use low-dose aspirin to help prevent clotting. But they have to be careful with that because it can increase the risk of bleeding. And again, hydration is super important here. It helps thin the blood, makes it flow better. Think of it like adding water to a thick sauce.
Right, to make it more pourable. I like that analogy. Are there any lifestyle changes that can help with polycythemia?
Yeah, definitely. Just like with anemia, a healthy lifestyle can make a big difference. Exercise can improve circulation, which can help prevent clotting. And it's really important to avoid smoking. Smoking actually makes your blood thicker and increases the risk of clots.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So many things are connected to our blood health.
Yeah, it's all connected.
It really is.
This guide has been really eye-opening, learning about all these blood disorders and how they can affect people's lives. But there's one more thing I wanted to touch on, and that's the psychological and emotional side of things. Like, how does it affect people's mental health to be diagnosed with these conditions?
Yeah, that's a really important part of it. Living with a chronic blood disorder like sickle cell disease or polycythemia, it's tough, not just physically, but emotionally too. The constant pain, fatigue, the limitations it puts on your life, all of that can take a toll on your mental health. Anxiety, depression, even feelings of isolation are really common.
That makes sense. It's a lot to deal with. Are there resources out there for people who are struggling?
Yeah, there are. Connecting with other people who understand what you're going through can be so helpful. There are support groups and online communities where people share their experiences, get advice, find emotional support, and individual therapy or counseling can be really helpful too.
It's good to remember that healthcare isn't just about the physical stuff. Taking care of your mental and emotional health is just as important. Now, before we move on to the final part of our deep dive, are there any key things you want our listeners to take away from what we've discussed so far?
Well, I think the biggest takeaway is that blood health is incredibly important, and it's connected to so many other aspects of our overall well-being.
Absolutely. It's like this hidden world inside of us that we don't really think about until something goes wrong.
Right. It's easy to take our blood for granted. But this nursing guide really opened my eyes to how complex and fascinating it all is.
It really did. And speaking of the guide, there are a few more things in here that I wanted to touch on before we wrap up. It talks about the assessment of the hematologic system. So if a nurse is trying to figure out what's going on with someone's blood, what are some of the things they look for?
Well, they'll start by taking a really detailed history. They'll want to know about the patient's symptoms, their medical history, any family history of blood disorders, what medications they're taking. Even things like diet and exercise habits can be important.
So it's like piecing together a puzzle, trying to get the whole picture.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then, of course, there's the physical exam.
Right. What do they focus on during that?
Well, they'll pay close attention to the patient's skin, looking for any signs of pallor, which is basically paleness, or jaundice, that yellowing we were talking about before. They'll also check for bruising or petechiae, which are those tiny little red or purple spots that can indicate bleeding problems.
Okay. The guy also mentions checking the cardiovascular and respiratory systems. Why are those important for blood health?
Well, anemia can affect both the heart and the lungs. If your blood isn't carrying enough oxygen, your heart has to work harder to pump that oxygen poor blood throughout your body.
Oh, that makes sense.
So you might notice a rapid heartbeat.
Mm-hmm.
And your lungs might have to work harder too to try to get more oxygen into the blood. So that's why you might get short of breath.
So it all kind of works together.
It does.
And what about neurological signs, like we talked about with B12 deficiency, those tingling and numbness and stuff? Do nurses check for that too?
Oh yeah, for sure. They'll check for any dizziness, confusion, or problems with balance and coordination. Those can all be signs of neurological problems related to anemia.
Wow. So they really look at everything. It's amazing how much information they can gather just from observing and talking to the patient.
It is. And then, of course, there are the diagnostic tests.
Right. The guide mentions a lot of those. What are some of the most common tests they use for blood disorders?
The most basic one is a complete blood count, a CBC. That measures all the different parts of your blood, like the red blood cells, white blood cells, and platelets. It gives doctors a good overview of what's going on.
Okay. And what about those other tests, like iron studies, vitamin B12, and folate levels, even a bone marrow biopsy? When do they do those?
They'll order those when they're looking for something more specific. Like if they suspect iron deficiency anemia, they'll do iron studies. For megaloblastic anemia, they'll check B12 and folate levels. And a bone marrow biopsy, that's a bit more invasive, so they only do that if they need to look more closely at the bone marrow itself, like if they suspect a plastic anemia.
Okay, so it's all about finding the right clues to make the right diagnosis.
Exactly.
Well, I think we've pretty much covered everything in this nursing guide, and it's been an amazing journey.
It really has.
We've learned so much about the causes and effects of different blood disorders and the importance of early detection, finding the right treatment, and taking care of our overall health.
It's been a pleasure talking with you about all of this. I hope our listeners have learned a lot, too, and that they're leaving with a better understanding of how important their blood is.
Me, too. And, you know, this deep dive has really just scratched the surface of hematology. There's still so much more to learn.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's a constantly evolving field.
So stay curious. Keep learning. And never be afraid to ask your doctor questions about your health. The more you know, the better you can advocate for yourself and make good decisions.
Couldn't agree more.
Well, that's it for this deep dive into the world of hematology. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.